Good morning.
Good morning.
I have to admit, when I saw Tiffany here earlier, I was a little sad that I was after her again, because she's such a dynamic speaker. But today, I'd like to talk about some of our research and where we're going. Basically, the stakeholders' perspective of looking at depression management within a decision-making tool in the Alaska Native American Indian primary care setting. I'd like to thank our investigators. So all of our co-investigators, both qualitative and quantitative, and then our consultants as well, and PCORI for funding this initiative. All right, so I want to start by talking about two things. One, the setting where this research is happening, and give a little bit of framework of exactly why this really works within our setting and what we've done to start that. And then also, what is stakeholder engagement? Because we've seen lots of different things and lots of different kind of on the spectrum of what is stakeholder engagement. Is it basically a checkoff? I've shown them my tool, I've shown them what I want to do, and they've okayed it, so that's stakeholder engagement. Or is it really involving them at every step within the process? So who needs to be involved, the approval versus engagement process, and then what's the impact on the product? Which I'll tell you about our product in a minute, and it's definitely been an uphill battle. So South Central Foundation is in Anchorage, Alaska. It is one of 13 corporations throughout the kind of state of Alaska. It's broken down. We cover 231 federally recognized tribes. We cover 107,000 square miles, 60 communities or 60 villages, and then approximately 60,000 people. But if you look on this little bottom map, our geographic area is vast and huge. And a majority of those communities that we cover are not even on the road system. So when you talk about walking through the grass, through the fields, you know, we're swimming. So there's no other way that we could potentially get to those by either boat or by flight. And if you look a little bit closer, here's how it breaks it down by those specific regions. So the Alaska Native healthcare system is different in that in 1998, we broke away from the Indian Health Service, and we formed corporations. So kind of similar to like Microsoft, except not with all that money. So they broke it down, and we have basically 13 corporations in which each get a specific pot of money from the federal government to provide our own health care. So when that happened, it was really innovative in so many ways, because we actually did kind of the grassroots start for, well, how do we want our healthcare to run? What is the focus of healthcare within our community? Do we need to engage customer owners and figure out exactly what is wellness to them? Is it really spiritual, physical, emotional wellness all together wrapped in one? And how do we provide that? And what services are needed in order to provide that? So it's definitely a different view, and something that I know I came to really, I was drawn to that and wanted to participate in something that was that much focused on the customer owner and focused on what we could provide. So what is our mission? Our vision is a Native community to enjoy physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual wellness. So everything that we do, from our clinical care to our actual practice, to our research, all has to fit one of these pieces and parts. The mission is working together within the Native community to achieve wellness through health and related services. And this is important because every aspect of the study, I'll show you how that actually, how we meet mission and vision. So what I'd like to start with is a little bit about depression management at South Central. So I know that, you know, everybody has heard about some of our trials and tribulations with mental health services. So we've had a lot of depression, a lot of suicide attempts. There's a lot of suicidality within a lot of the rural villages. And so we've really worked hard to try to figure out exactly how to address this issue and how can we identify customer owners who really need some assistance or help. So it was back in 2001 that we worked with some investigators at the University of Colorado to see, A, how can we screen and determine and identify customer owners who need some assistance and identify those individuals who might be at risk. And are the tools that are available, do they really speak to our customer owners? Are they using terms that our customer owners actually would use to describe that they are depressed? So depression wasn't a UPIC word. It wasn't an Athabascan term. It wasn't something that our individuals even knew. It was more the feelings, how everything was, how they were doing. And a lot of our customer owners didn't even realize that some of the things that they were having symptoms with, so in particular, you know, insomnia, et cetera, if those things were basically depression. So in 2001, we actually launched within our primary care clinics a depression management screening tool. And so here's our little two. We used an adapted version of the PHQ-9, which is a standard tool. And we found that there was a high prevalence of symptoms and a low utilization of behavioral services. So though we didn't have that special kind of, you know, brick building, we had a different part of the hospital. And when you look at who is employed within our institution, so we have we cover 60,000 individuals. But a majority, over 50% of the individuals that works within the South Central Foundation healthcare system are Alaska Native and American Indian. So it could be your cousin, your brother, they see you going down that hall, they know where you're going. And so now there's this kind of, well, do I want to go? Do I need help that bad? Or do I get help when I need it? So that was how this whole primary care identification came about. But we stopped there. And we stopped there for multiple years. So we identified, but then again, we were sending them down the hall to get some help. Well, that really wasn't going to work for our customer owners. So now the story behind how this PCORI project came about, and it's actually a funny story. We were in a meeting, and I'm a pharmacist by trade, and I was talking to one of our VPs who was complaining about our drug budget again. Well, he's like, we spend so much on depression, we spend so much on medications, well, you know, why is it not getting better? Well, because people don't get them filled, or don't get them refilled. Or they'll take that prescription that the provider gives them, and they'll get it filled, but they never, ever use it. Or they use 3 days' worth. Well, I don't feel any better, 3 days. I'm not taking this anymore, it's making me drowsy. Or I read on the label, it might influence my sexual activity. So there's all of these factors that customer owners were basically not going to do this. And so we kind of looked at, well, what could we do? How could we influence? And kind of backing up a step, is the medication really what they want? Are we just giving a Band-Aid to the problem, or are we even offering them what the solutions would be that they would be interested in? So we looked at a couple things through some semi-structured interviews, and I'll talk about those in a minute. But people don't pursue treatment. They don't come in saying, I think I'm depressed. I think I need some help. It's more something that you would find out during that visit with lots of other things that are going on. So the screening works, but only if it's consistently done. You know, absenteeism from work, and then again, suicide, especially in our smaller communities. We talked about prematurely discontinuing treatment. So though we counsel every customer owner who gets a prescription in the pharmacy, is there really an understanding that, yes, it's a commitment to start a medication, and so if that is my option, then I have to be committed to wait it out, to see if it's going to work, and maybe it's not going to work. And those discussions that they have with friends and relatives about, oh, I was on that Prozac, it didn't work, those influence how they decide to treat. So they're going to be very selective. And then many people prefer other types of treatments. So, you know, complementary medicine, traditional healing, there's all sorts of things, support groups, clergy. And so we were talking to customer owners and we wanted to know, well, what do you want as your treatment? And maybe it's a combination of things, and what combination can we help you with? So I proposed this to our VP, and I said, well, we don't even really know what they want. We don't know what our customers want or need. So if you really want to figure out why your budget's going up, let's kind of step back and write out and figure out, well, why? So that led to us talking about decision support. So how could we aid the clinical decision-making by clarifying the treatments, clarifying the risks, clarifying the benefits, the preferences, facilitating communication. And kind of stepping back a little bit, we wanted to use technology and we wanted to bring it into the primary care clinic. So now we're taking away two big factors. One, they don't have to go down that scary hall. Two, they don't have to talk to their relatives. They could just talk to the set of providers that they would like to, and we could help them by giving them enough information to make those decisions, but not necessarily too much. So kind of going through here, here's the specific aims that we had for our PCORI trial. So we looked at identifying stakeholder priorities, and we did the key informant interviews in order to identify that. And by key informant interviews, we used all stakeholders. So when you look at what stakeholder engagement really is, it's basically looking at how can we find out what's impacting the person who's going to be taking that, as well as the person who's going to be providing that. Because if you don't have all aspects of care, if you don't have the provider input, if you don't have, you know, the people who are going to be signing the checks, if you don't have the people who are going to be actually taking the medications, you really aren't going to get anywhere. So we've completed all of our semi-structured interviews. Then developing and evaluating the support tool, so the steering committee feedback and kind of looking at the pilot test tool. So we developed a steering committee in order to help drive that. And then lastly, evaluating the tool, which we're not quite at yet because I'll kind of go through some of our trials and tribulations. And apparently I've talked a little too much, so I'm trying to hurry it up a little. So what is true involvement, and how can we make sure that we've involved everybody that we need to in all of the decisions? So here's who we identified as our stakeholders. So we don't call our customer owners patients because we consider them to be both owners in the care as well as the customers who we're needing to serve. So it gives everybody this idea that we want to make sure that you remember you're always serving, and it's a service that we're providing, and we're making sure that we engage customers in all steps. We did form a steering committee of all of the members who we thought would be definitively useful, so both inside and out. So investigators who are within the behavioral health services to make sure that we would somehow incorporate within our behavioral health teams the necessary treatments within the clinics, as well as kind of outside investigators, so checking the tool, so a decision support tool, expert, et cetera. The IRB and tribal health services, which is very different, and we'll kind of talk about that in a second, the providers, and then our health leaders, which, just a kind of side note, this is actually Catherine Gottlieb. She's our CEO, and she started as a receptionist in the old health service when it was run by Indian Health Service back in the 80s, and has worked her way up to being basically our head and has been a visionary within our organization. So the kind of IRB process with us doesn't end with the IRB. We actually have a research oversight committee that starts to decide, is this project even something interesting? Does it go along with the mission and vision at our institution? So if it doesn't, it's already decided that it's not going to be something that we're going to go forth. And our mission and vision is updated by surveys and such by providers, customer owners, every year. So we have full things at our gathering every year to decide what is our priority. Then we have the IRB. Then we have our executive committee, which is our tribal review process. So they have they review our projects, and then also the board of directors. So to give you an idea, we had to wait quite a long time. It was about 8 months. So we started, the minute we put the application in, we started the review process in order to make sure we were in. So shared responsibility versus engagement versus approval. So we did conduct those 38 semi-structured interviews with stakeholders, the customer owners, the leaders, and providers. And then all of our guides that we used to drive these conversations were all reviewed by the VPs as well as our executive committee and steering committee members. So here is a couple examples of some of our treatment decisions and some of the things that we heard from our customer owners. So they felt like they ought to be able to manage all of this on our own without needing machines, medicines. It seemed too much like taking the easy route. Yeah, maybe I just don't feel bad enough yet. I recently began going to counseling. I know if I took an antidepressant, I might feel better sooner, but I don't like the sound of side effects that I could have. My therapist and I have set some goals to work on, and we agreed to revisit my decision in 3 months. So the commitment to quality and process is kind of a little bit of a timeline. And I know this is a lot of work, but I wanted to kind of show how that initial drive from all of those interviews has really resulted in some changes in our process. So if you look here, we got the grant. Then we ended up talking to customer owners, and the biggest thing that they said is, we don't want to be forced to make a decision on that first initial visit. So now I've screened positive, but am I ready to start on something, anything? Counseling, medication, no, not really. So based on that, we want some time. And so what we were originally proposing was a decision support tool, an electronic one that they would have in clinic and be able to walk through. Well, that wasn't what they wanted. They wanted two things. They wanted a small decision support tool to start getting their minds thinking about those potential options, so what are the choices, and then also something that they could take home to their families and discuss it, because the family was involved in the decision. The community is involved in all pieces and parts. So when they really talked about it, we ended up saying, oh, now we have to make really two, a web-based version as well as kind of this in-clinic version. And as a side note, on another study, we actually looked at technology use, because there's a lot of misconceptions that because we are so rural, that technology use isn't vital. No, our customer owners, 60-plus, are using smartphones and technology, because if they don't, they are totally disconnected from all of their family and friends. So it's really it's more of a need there in order to be able to communicate, not necessarily, it's a vital need. So technology and utilization of technology is pretty rampant. So engaging the stakeholder in guidance of the tool and development before and after. So it gave us the context, the information. Okay. And I am out of time, but sorry. So what I'd like to just say one last thing is that we had multiple renditions of the tool. We had lots of different pieces. We brought each piece to all of our teammates, and we used TestFlight, another technology, in order for all areas, our ROC, our executive committee, our members, to be able to review the slides. So when they reviewed the slides, we can actually show them, and I do have some examples of the slides as well and how they kind of developed over time. And so there's a couple pictures of some of the slides that have developed over time and what people liked and didn't like. And then adding the culture to the slides, so making sure that we actually addressed and brought that to the community, and then how we basically put it into our actual process. So we made sure that it's going to be something that isn't just for this research project. We are making something that's going to be used in clinic in order to help guide the decision at all stages. And Guyana.